This is a podcast from Minute Media.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we're coming to you from a couple of different places on the internet. We're coming to you live from Crowdcast, also live from YouTube. Maybe you listen to the podcast later, iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you listen. It's all good, bro. We love it. Check it out. Just download those old casts, is like I always say, right, guys?
Wow. Right? Alex, you have big, cool guy at the record shop vibes right now.
Yeah. Hey, have you guys checked out The Beatles? I was watching a documentary about them on Disney Plus between showings of Avengers Infinity War, and I didn't like it. It seemed like a ripoff of That Thing You Do.
Oh, boy.
Wow. That's a take I haven't heard, and what a hot one.
Well, folks, we have a great show for you tonight. First of all, before we welcome our guest in here in a moment, we should take a little bit to wish you all a happy Hanukkah.
Happy Hanukkah. It is the
third night of Hanukkah. Pete, Justin, I know you don't celebrate, but you're welcome anyway. That's one of the things about the Jewish religion. Everybody is welcome to the holidays. Welcome to ask questions.
I'll head right over.
Yeah.
Where do we go?
Anytime. I have a bunch of leftover latkes from my party the other day. They're very good. Highly recommend
them.
They did
look good. I saw you posted.
But this ties into today's cocktail. Brett Macris, our resident CBC chef, has been curating cocktails for us for a good long while now, several months. It's been very awesome. But he suggested doing a Hanukkah cocktail this time and sent through a list. Admittedly, he said, I don't know anything about this. So, Alex, you're a Jew. He said it in a very weird, pointed way,
man,
too.
I don't think he said it like that.
Made me very uncomfortable.
What are you doing, man? He's got a family.
I don't know. It was very, there was undertones there. That's all I'm saying. But he said, could you take a look through this list? And so here's the thing. First of all, Judaism, not a very big cocktail culture, if at all.
No.
Like,
I've been to so many synagogue bars.
Brooklyn.
Now, Manischewitz, which is the world's sweetest wine for children, that's a cocktail, right?
Baby wine, they call it.
Baby wine. So looking through that list, I was like, these are fall drinks that you're lying about or they're blue. That's basically the thing going on here.
Well, it is amazing. Catholics are like, hey, we drink wine every weekend because we call it blood. And Judaism's like, hey, slow down on the alcohol. We're fine arguing with each other.
We can do that. Not drunk. But one of the things out there was a olive oil gin sour, which Brett made, and I made today. I'll tell you what, it's very weird. It felt like the thing that was most appropriate because oil is something that is very much part of the holiday. It kind of tastes like drinking a lemon chiffon pie a little bit, like down to almost the consistency. So I don't know.
What you're talking about.
Yeah. This cocktail feels very Old Testament, very like first draft, kind of like, it's a cocktail.
Oh, first draft? All right, I'm getting some undertones from that as well, Justin.
That's not specific to Judaism. That's the Bible's, you know, the first draft for all the religions.
Keep digging the hole. It's cool. Anyway, this drink is very interesting. If you do want to make it, it's gin, lemon juice, egg white, what was the other?
Olive oil.
Oh, simple syrup.
Olive oil.
And olive oil. Yes, olive oil is the important part as well.
So as Alex said, I'm upstairs in my home. My kids are in the other room, and one of them is screaming, "I did poopies." So I'll be right back.
Great. In the meantime, I think we're going to bring in our guest, if that's okay with you.
This is the intro he asked for. BRB.
Yes. this is going so well. We're going to bring in our guest today, Mark Wade, a very talented, very prolific writer, and now the publisher over at Humanoids. There is a new book called The History of Science Fiction that is coming out. Mark, so good to see you. Thanks for coming on the show.
Welcome back.
My pleasure, gentlemen. Mark Wade's in the house, and you know what that means. Turn off the comments.
We can't do it. We can't do it. I'm sorry. Also apologies. Justin had to run away. He had a emergency, as you may have
heard. I heard. Yeah. Okay. I'm glad that was one of his kids talking and not. Okay.
Yeah, it's cool. We're a very professional show, and we're very locked up in everything that we do. But very excited to have you here to talk about this project, which is really cool. I looked through this book earlier today. It is exactly what the title says. It's very dense. It's a complete, or as complete as you can be up to a certain time period, history of science fiction. But the twist, very appropriate to the show, is it's in comic book graphic novel form. When did you come onto this project? Was it... correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it was published internationally, and then this is a translation, or am I incorrect?
No, that's correct. Yeah, it was published by our, I mean, Humanoids has the American office. We also have the French office. So the French office had published it some time ago. I saw the galleys. I fell in love with this thing before you could read a single word and knew this was something. And so we had it translated, and I'm like, okay, well now, yeah, for sure, this is absolutely worth doing over here. So, you know, there were some adjustments to be made, some swap outs to be done. There was a lot of production work on our end for a finished book, but the end result, I think, is just incredible.
Well, so given that this was published in another country, obviously science fiction is universal in terms of the world, though there are differences when you go to country, were there any things that had to be tweaked or changed at all when you're bringing it over for an American audience?
Yeah, a couple of things. I mean, the biggest one was we lost a few pages that were specifically to the French audience and French science fiction. But in doing, it's just a couple, but in doing so, we added a few pages that are specific to American science fiction, just to localize a little bit more specifically. I think the material about gender politics and in science fiction and women in science fiction, I think, was beefed up. The other big thing we had to do, and all credit to our editors and to our production people, is that if you notice going through the thing, there are, I mean, dozens of sidebars, right? If you like this, you will also like these five things. Well, all of those five things, all, you know, and all their instances were in French, and they were a lot of them were of French material. So I don't see much point in handing you a sidebar and saying, you know, if you love this, go read this book in French. Yeah. So we had to look for either translations, substitutions, new images for, you know, for films that are American, but they were using the French posters, things like that. So there was a lot of legwork to be done there. But again, in the end, totally worth it.
Well, I love the idea of how the information is rolled out as well. I don't know if you can necessarily get into spoilers for the book, but it's presented, it's sort of framed up as several famous science fiction robots are trying to find out about the history of science fiction. And so they end up exploring it with the writers themselves. Was there a particular section or writer, given your lengthy experience with the form, that you were particularly drawn to or excited to find out more information about?
There's that section that is the five-way conversation between, say, Asimov, Silverberg, Heinlein. I forget who else is in that mix. And again, these are, you know, presupposed conversations that are, you know, fictional conversations, but they're rooted in fact and they're rooted in history and so forth. Each of these writers talking to each other about their various works and about each other's work, which I thought was a masterstroke, because not only does it use the form well of comics, but also it's a way of looking at the history of science fiction and the stories through the eyes of the creators who made the stuff, which I thought, again, an inspired choice on the writer's part.
I feel like there have been so many histories brought to the comic book medium. Why do you think that works so well? It feels like something that's really happening right now.
Well, I tell you, it's the marriage of pictures and words that's so unique to comics, the way we use the form, I think does a really good job of teaching. If you took this book, right, the one that you have in your hand, The History of Science Fiction, and just publish it as a manuscript, it would be insanely dense. It wouldn't be quite as entertaining, I don't think, because it would feel more like homework. And that is not a slight on the writers. I'm just saying that is the choice that they made, the choice that he made, the choice that, you know, artist Jibril Morissette fam did to bring the visual to it. I think.
Why are you so down on homework, though? I guess is my big question.
Everyone loves homework. So I think that, and that's the thing about this book, is that it doesn't, there's so much information in here, and yet it doesn't feel like homework to pick this up. You're not going to be able to read it in one evening. You're not going to be able to blow through it, but it's a good, like, all day sucker. This thing is going to last you for a while.
You were talking earlier about the coordination between humanoids on both sides of the Atlantic Ocean. What is that like? How do you work with the company on both sides and trade this information and trade these properties back and forth?
Well, thank you, Zoom. That's step one. But mostly it's keeping lines of communication open, knowing at all times what their new projects are, what our new projects are. We will take projects on sometimes because we think that we can do enough with them in the English language version to sustain. But there's sometimes some come across our desk that are great, but borderline in terms of what we think we could sell. But if we can move them also in France, that helps, you know, with the budgets and so forth. And they do the same with their material as well. So we're constantly sharing with each other, which, you know, the other's office, what material is coming in, what we're looking at publishing. And, you know, I mean, sometimes the decisions are also made, look, this thing is on the edge and it won't do well in mm-hmm. the European market, so we can't publish it, or vice versa. You know, this thing is on the edge, it'll do well in Europe, but not necessarily in the States. Those are much rarer instances, but we keep those lines of communication open.
So it's a whole BBC, BBC America type situation.
Yeah, exactly. Basically. Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Put it in terms we can really understand.
Me personally, I guess.
What's the big difference between European comics and American comics? I feel like I always am like, I want to go read some French comics. And I'm like, where do I find them? How do I get into that world?
There is... I'm still trying to figure it out to some degree. I always think I know exactly, because a lot of it is like looking at our, I'm gonna get to your question in a second, but I just want to take a sidebar that, you know, a lot of it is looking at pitches that come into us and trying to evaluate before we even show it to the Paris office, is this something that would do well overseas? And I've developed an eye for it with the help of Fabrice Geiger, who is the owner and has been the owner and head honcho forever. Still developing an eye, but I'm still not quite there. It tends to be a little more expanded. It tends to be very art-centric. Not that the stories aren't good, but the emphasis really is on the art and the fact that the artist working can sometimes take, you know, they'll do a page a week, maybe, you know, and that's for them, that is a rapid pace. And yeah, they're working a little bit bigger because it's in that bande dessinée format, which means it's more like the, you know, well, to use the American office reference, to Black Label books that DC is doing, the bigger volumes.
Right.
But still, it's just a slower pace there. They put more into the art, especially the coloring. And that, I think that really is the fundamental difference.
You love that European lifestyle.
That's well, also, I mean, also add that, you know, genres is everything too. I mean, here you can hardly sell anything that's not superheroes, and overseas you can't. You can sell everything but superheroes.
So let's take a big step back. How did you get involved in humanoids? Because you've worn so many different hats in the industry, you've done so many different things, but how specifically did they draw you in, or how did you end up getting hooked up with the company?
The hat wearing is kind of what led me here. I said, they were looking at launching a line of periodicals three or four years ago. And they needed someone with the experience to help them craft. I pitched myself as somebody who knows what a first issue is, who knows how to sell a first issue and get the readers intrigued, and then do it from an American, I can be the representative of the American audience. And that made me attractive to them. I started consulting on other books, other things. You know, the periodical stuff went away, but we've been publishing more and more original graphic novels. And one day that just turned into, you know, by now you're kind of doing most of the stuff a publisher would do anyway. So let's just make it official.
Cool. Well, it's funny that you say that, because this seems like such a kind of love letter to science fiction, to stories, and talk about a great way of like getting people excited, like the characters chosen. This was such a cool project that it feels like it does, like you're saying, have your fingerprints all over it. So I was immediately sucked in. This was such a cool story. So congratulations. This is really awesome.
Thanks. It honestly, if I get hit by a bus then tomorrow, then I'm okay with this being the crown jewel of my tenure here so far.
Wow. Why is that specifically?
I don't know why I always go there, but I go there.
Wow.
I mean, that said, though, why specifically this book? I know we've talked about it, but what was so special about this for you personally?
It's a field that I love. If it had been the same exact book, but it had been the history of botany, I don't think I'd be on the podcast right now raving about it.
We do a separate botany podcast.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's a
subject that I love. And it's just the way it's presented, I find so engaging. It's not like there's not plenty of places on the web or in libraries to find out more about this part of science fiction or that part of science fiction, but it's not something I gravitate toward. But you put it in front of me like this. And again, it's not just the conversation between the imagined conversation between the science fiction authors. It's also, you know, a lot of there's sections that are just illustrated text. Here's an example of what Corn Wienerberg looked like, and here's his ouvrage or whatever. Here's a sidebar on this character, on this writer, on that writer. And also the fact that it's very up to date. I mean, we carry it right up to, from Mary Shelley to Rebecca Roanhorse, just like all the way up. And we wanted to make sure it was contemporary contemporary as we got to the publishing finish line.
Do you think if this is a success, do you think it's the sort of thing that you might revisit every couple of years to update it?
It's conceivable. I mean, I would certainly be open to it if the author and the artist were into it, because again, they did such a great job, and I can't imagine anybody else. I wouldn't want anybody else to come muck around with it because it's so of them, but I think so. I do not think I've been asked this. I don't think there's room in my heart for like a second volume, because I think that this is, it's not like you're going to learn everything there is about science fiction in this one volume, but this is such a comprehensive look that I look at this and I picked it up. When I picked it up, I thought, oh, this is like a main course. And when I was done reading it, I'm like, no, this is an appetizer, because all of this is, if you like, you know, here's a writer that you might like, and here, go off here, go off here, go off here.
Oh, that's cool.
This is a much broader question, but you were, I think, one of the big pioneers with interactivity in comic books. And it's not that this project is the opposite, but it's definitely, like you were talking about, it's a big meal of a book that you want to sit down and spend your time with and look through the pages. Do you think the comic book industry is at that place now where it's going to continue to innovate in terms of interactivity? Or is it more about these experiences that really go back to the roots of the graphic novel?
I don't know. If you'd asked me a few years ago, I would have said, yeah, we're still pushing innovative technology for interaction, but I don't know that we are. I mean, and that's nothing wrong with that necessarily, but if you look at what's the biggest success story in comics the last couple of years? Webtoons. Mm-hmm. There's nothing interactive about that other than I do this. And, you know, what we tried to do, say, with Thrill Bent, when it was a little more interactive and a little, you know, not motion comics, but something where there was a little more, we were using the medium of the web to tell these stories. That was a noble experiment that just didn't seem to go anywhere because we couldn't find enough people who were interested in that form of storytelling as we adapted it. So I would love to see more innovation. I just honestly don't know what that looks like at this point.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people are looking, we've talked about this a lot on the show, but just the whole Substack experiment, which has panned out, I think, in different ways, depending on how you look at it. But that seems like something potentially where there might be a place for. Have you looked into that at all, either for yourself or Humanoids?
I poked around about it. Yeah, a little bit. You know, and it's, I mean, for me personally, I understand all the virtue to it, but the moment you tell me I have to write like three newsletters a week, I think, oh my God, it's homework, and I just freeze up. You get out of it what you put into it. And for Humanoids, I mean, nothing like that makes any sense right now. But what you're talking about, though, is, as I understood your question originally, it was more about the medium itself. And now we're kind of drifting into innovations in distribution. Mm-hmm. And there's tons and tons of progress to be made there, as we've seen with Substack. I've been a big advocate for direct-to-consumer for a long, long time, which is strange for a guy who works at companies who are the middleman. But I think that connecting, and if the music industry has taught us nothing, it's connecting the artist directly to the audience, and that's how everybody makes their money. That is a proven formula at this point. Mm.
as this is also specifically for you, but just in terms of creating content, do you feel like you're at the point right now where you're concentrating more on being the publisher at Humanoids, or do you want to get back to the daily grind of writing comics at any point?
I don't mind getting back to the grind. The daily grind is a little scary, but but honestly, you know, with the change in regime at DC, you know, they knocked down my door. Like the day the regime change happened, I got 4 phone calls, which was very flattering and very nice. So I'm able to do whatever
that's awesome
over there. So I'll be doing, you know, a couple of things over there. Still spending a lot of time with Humanoids because that is, you know, that's my day job, and I take it very seriously. But and also I'm doing some writing for Humanoids on graphic novels that, because their artists take, you know, a week through a page, you'll see some time after I'm dead. so I keep my finger in it.
Yeah. Also on the business side of things, there was the big announcement recently that Taika Waititi is going to be doing the InCal.
Yeah.
How are you involved in that at all, or is that a different division of the company?
The thing is, the at this point, the American company is like 10 people. So, okay. So we're all
right.
We're all doing everybody else's, we're all covering for everybody else, like back and forth and stuff. We're all working as a team. So to that extent, I'm involved. I met him a couple of weeks ago, and we had a very brief conversation about Thor, which I found interesting.
Cool.
And I think he's the right guy for this job. He's bang on the right guy for this job. This is, you know, this is a movie that's been trying to be made for 20 years. And
yeah.
I think he can absolutely capture the spirit of it.
Yeah, it was when I heard that announcement, I couldn't believe that it was actually going to be a movie, because I remember being obsessed with those books and then thinking back to them, I'm like, I don't know how you do that.
Yeah. I don't screen. Either, but if anybody does, I'm hoping it's Taika.
What other projects are coming out from Humanoids that you're excited about or people should be checking out other than the history of science fiction?
Sure. That's a big one. The other, like, we have a couple of big ticket items for the holidays. I mean, one of them is we are doing Deconstructing the Jodoverse, which is a big 2-volume hardcover upscale project that is really nice looking and is really sort of encompasses all of his work all of that Meta Baron's work outside of the InCal, because we did Deconstructing the InCal last year. That's one thing. I mean, we've got what's coming up in the fall. I mean, we've got a book that I believe in. It's not going to have a huge audience, but it's really important. It's a book called Van Nath, and it is a biography of Van Nath, who was one of the victims of the Khmer Rouge purges and was taken into the prison camps of Khmer Rouge and was forced to paint for them and, you know, paint portraits of the Khmer Rouge leaders, wow. You know, or else, you know, out you go. And it's a really strong, important story. I really like that thing a lot.
Wow. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's a pretty big umbrella here at Humanoids, because it's the science fiction stuff.
Cover in the bases.
You know, it's the InCal, Meta Baron, science fiction stuff, but we also are doing, you know, we're also doing the Life Drawn line, which is that stuff, Louisa Then and Now of a couple of years ago, which is still one of the best things we ever published. Books that are grounded in the real world, autobiographical, biographical. We just did one on Bela Lugosi that was a biography of him, a graphic novel biography that has done really well, and it's really good. There's another project that we're doing that I really like. It's by Ibrahim Mustafa, who did The Count for, who did a book called Count for us earlier this year, and it's called Retroactive. And it is a science fiction story with a bit of a time travel twist, but that's not really the main focus of it. He's writing, drawing. He did a great job with Count. He outdid himself with Retroactive. I mean, it's terrific.
Cool.
I mean, like you said, it's just funny to hear you talk about the stuff. Like you said, you're going to be doing stuff for DC. You just did a Fantastic Four story as well. But there must be something nice and refreshing about spending the bulk of your day not on superheroes, not on these massive universes.
It really is. I mean, I love me some superheroes. They pay the bills over the years. But I've always loved, whether it's with Empire, with Potter's Field or whatever, just sort of monkeying around in other genres to show I can do Archie, you know, to show I can do it.
Yeah.
And so it's nice to be able to be in a place where that is, you know, that's something that we can do with some measure of success in a world where Marvel and DC couldn't be able to match that kind of success, because that's not what they do.
Right.
Awesome. Mark, this is great. I love the book. Very excited to check out all the stuff from Human Earth.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Congratulations on everything. And it was a good chatting.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Have a good night.
Great. Thank you, Mark. Bruce Wayne may appear to be a wealthy playboy, but beneath this facade, his true identity is that of the Batman, waging an endless war against crime. Join the Caped Crusader and Batman The Audio Adventures, the first scripted audio original featuring Batman and his villainous rogues gallery in a world premiere story of life and death in Gotham City, debuting exclusively on HBO Max. Starring Jeffrey Wright as Batman and a who's who of incredible Saturday Night Live alums, this rollicking adventure told across 10 episodes is written and directed by Emmy winner Dennis McNicholas, includes devilishly delightful original music by Doug Bossi, and performances by Rosario Dawson, John Leguizamo, Chris Parnell, Melissa Villaseñor, Seth Meyers, Jason Sudeikis, Brooke Shields, Fred Armisen, and many, many more. Go to hbomax.com/Batman Audio Adventures for more and stream Batman The Audio Adventures only on HBO Max.
All right, there we go. Sorry, Justin, I cut you off. Mark Waid, everybody, publisher of Humanoids, History of Science Fiction, is absolutely amazing. And like we were talking about, completely massive, something you're going to spend a lot of time with. And also, like we were talking about, very engaging as a graphic novel, which I was very pleased and happy about. So definitely check that out.
Great book.
And folks, we're going to move on with our next section, which is my favorite section, because you all make it up. It's your audience questions.
Yeah.
And for audience questions, this is pretty straightforward. You got this. All you got to do is drop a question over in the YouTube comments or an ask a question over here on Crowdcast, and we'll get to them. But first, other than the olive oil gin sour,
how is the salad dressing going, Alex?
It's great. I actually switched over to bullet bourbon is what I'm drinking.
Wow.
All right.
The original.
No, listen, it's also started to separate a little bit, which I don't know.
Sorry, Alex, what day in Hanukkah did everyone switch to bourbon? I don't know the story.
Third night.
Night.
Yeah.
Big bourbon night. Bullets,
they lit the menorah on the first night, and they were so surprised it was still on. By the third night, they were like, break out the bullet bourbon, man.
Bourbon, let's barbecue, let's have a hayride? Is that what? I don't know.
Bacon cheeseburgers, all of that stuff. Good stuff. What are you drinking, Justin?
I'm drinking a Pilsner from Threes Brewing named Vlight.
Whoa.
Vlight. The Vlight is blue. And then eventually I'm going to switch over to the original beverage.
Oh, yeah. Dude.
These are both blue for Hanukkah. Thank you so much.
100%. Really, I'm here to support the blue.
Pete, what about you?
I'm drinking a little bit of the old White Lightning. You know what I mean?
What
does that mean? I was visiting my down in Baltimore. My brother was like, hey, this guy dropped off a bunch of White Lightning. You want any? And I was like, sure. Yeah. Why not?
All right. You got to just explain what that is.
White Lightning was your nickname in high school, right?
No, I appreciate that. But, you know, it's,
you mean moonshine?
Moonshine. Moonshine. Yeah. The old bathtub gin, the old, you know, I could, start a real fire with this thing here. Breathe fire. Yeah, it's rough, but
what's
you
the
know,
flavor?
It's,
burning
Sterno, I guess, is the you know, there was a bunch of raspberries in there, but they all turned white. So
yes,
yeah. Just you know, good stuff.
My favorite moonshine people add a infusion of raspberries. You got some high-end hicks you're talking to, Pete.
I should mention before we get into the questions here, if you are listening to this later as a podcast, leave us a question in the iTunes comments and we'll answer it live here on the show. Also, if you want to request a book for us to review over on the stack, please do that as well. We did skip a week, but we got a request to review Saga of the Swamp Thing Volume 2. So we're going to do that on this week's stack. But if you have a book, preferably not third volume of Swamp Thing just yet.
Because we're looking to shake it up. So let's do maybe Man Thing.
Mm-hmm. No. Something like think? That. But leave you it in the comments. Leave us iTunes comments specifically. Request something there, and we will review it over on the stack. We really appreciate that. We got a bunch of questions that are already popping up here. So why don't we go one over on YouTube? This is from Joe Benton. What's one of your favorite, most underrated or underappreciated comic book characters ever?
Wow. Underrated, underappreciated. I mean, the first answer is a hot topic on this podcast, but I would say Cyclops has really fallen out of favor. He's fallen out of favor to the point where he now he's like a non-factor in the X-Men books. And
finally,
I just think like there's a lot going on there. He was this one of the center focus characters of the X-Men for so long. And now everyone's like, get him out of here. Not interested. I want to see him back. He's a good character.
No, let's just enjoy this downswing for a little bit before you do something crazy like get him back. I disagree. I think we've had too much for so long, so it's nice to kind of
is this name of this segment audience questions hosts refute each other's answers?
Yeah, or, yeah.
Pete, what's your pick? What's your favorite most
I'm looking over at my my
list
kind
of
wall
comic book characters.
Yeah, my wall of comics to kind of get to see who's underrated, but I don't know. It's
maybe
it's,
some of the characters
who was
characters
I'll throw
like
it out.
Overrated.
I'll throw it out. Was it Lila is the name of Johnny's Skrull girlfriend from like the 90s?
Wow. I believe it's Lyta.
Lyta?
Is it?
Really? I don't know. Whatever it was. I always liked her. I thought she didn't get a fair shake. She had that old trouble with like pretending to be Alicia that she turned out to be a Skrull. And then Johnny was like, I feel kind of uncomfortable about this. And then she felt uncomfortable. I always thought there was some good romantic turmoil going on there.
That's a deep cut.
I mean, the only thing I come up with is concrete to me when I read it was like, why isn't more people talking about this amazing book? And that's the only thing I can think of that doesn't get enough credit.
It's Lijah. Lijah.
There we go. Very close. We were all very close. Why don't we move over to Layla Miller from X Factor? Anybody with that same sort of name, like in that area? I'm very underrated.
Lady Lay, the Bob Dylan song, very underappreciated. another good answer from Nat Towson in here. Daredevil's love interest, Kirsten the DA. Remember her? They truly bounced her because I agree. Good.
This is from Stray Bullet. Since we're in the season of traditions, what are some of your comic reading traditions? For example, I used to take every Wednesday off for new releases, pick up my stack, grab a drink and sit on my patio, play some music and read comics. Now I pour a cup of coffee and sit in 45 minutes of wonderful silence while I read before I go to work. What are some habits you have that enhances your comic reading?
That would be amazing.
I love Stray
Bullet.
I love
Stray
Bullet. I know. He has that European lifestyle we were talking about. Mm-hmm. What a dream. Olive oil cocktails and Wednesdays with comics.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's just the pull list. And my favorite thing is to kind of put the order of what I'm going to read. And just kind of organizing it where I give myself little treats for making it through certain comics that Alex makes us read. But I just think it's one of those things where it's like, it's like he's saying those moments where you're alone and you really kind of can just get into the magic that is comic books and taken away to this kind of this place where you're just kind of like this kid with the flashlight underneath the blanket, you know, where you're just really enjoying the world that it's taking you to.
Where on Tuesdays when we a panic read all the comics we're talking about on the stack. It's really,
yeah, I was about
really
to say
relaxing.
Monday night reading comics until my eyeballs feel like they're going to fall out. That's my tradition.
Yeah.
I did
at
used to have one.
Like 10 DC picks this week.
My God. Can't believe Pete's forcing us to do this.
Yeah. I mean, I used to have a nice tradition of getting a meatball sub at Subway and reading comics, but that was just.
Well, I'm glad we saved you from that. We added a couple of years to your life, buddy.
Yeah.
All right. This is from over on YouTube from Nelson Martinez. Do you guys ever fall into the Black Friday trap? If so, what things have you bought or regretted buying over the years?
Ooh.
Great question. And I don't really participate too much in Black Friday, but I will say this year I saw that they were, I have a Nintendo Switch that I don't play as much as I'd like. And the Castlevania, like a pack, the Activision had released was on sale for like $15. I was like, Cyber Monday, that shit. And I took it home.
Ooh, nice. Congratulations.
The only time I ever use Black Friday is to buy presents for the kids. That's pretty much it. Just kind of like,
oh, what a hero. I talk about buying a video game for myself, and you're like, I'm fucking Santa Claus at home.
Yeah. I meant the poor kids in the neighborhood who can't afford gifts for themselves. Go ahead.
What the fuck? Wow. The only time my brother uses it as revenge, because I'm usually visiting him in Baltimore.
Yeah, you're hepped up on some of that white lightning. You fall asleep the night before, wake up in the middle of a fucking Walmart.
Well, that's the thing. Opening he, time. Like, he makes us go to these goddamn nightmare places. Like, we went to Best Buy at like 4 a.m. one time.
Why? You don't need to go in person. You can get everything online. Why?
Oh, thanks, Phelps. Yeah, I agree with that. But for some reason, we had to be in store, and it was an absolute nightmare. And my brother loved every minute of it. So I don't know, man. God. To each their own.
This is from Edward Doherty over on Crowdcast. What are your favorite lesser-known works by Mark Waid? Mine is Empire, an awesome series about what happens when the villain wins. Agreed. Whoa. That one's great.
That one is great.
Mark Waid has written everything.
So he has.
There's a lot out there.
My favorite is his Daredevil stuff was really amazing. Some really cool storylines. It is the first thing that kind of jumps out to me.
I mean, also on the Empire bent, I always felt like it was they're different stories, but of a piece with Irredeemable, which was very dark Superman take, and that was very good as well. Justin, you got one?
Yes. I'm gonna say. I mean, he mentioned his Archie work. I really liked. He kicked. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess maybe that's not super lesser known, but he kick off the new run of the Archie world. That was great. Also, I'm gonna throw out his Aquaman run. I really, really liked.
Nice.
Yeah.
This is from Pablo D. Martinez. So, what do you drink while reading your favorite comics?
Well, it depends, you know. As Justin says, if you're trying to slam a bunch of, you know, there's nothing better than a Four Loko or a Mountain Dew combination. Ugh. You know what I mean? Just to like kind of really power through your sack, you know.
I like to have a couple of olive oil gin sours and just really
power them down.
I gotta say, I'm more of a coffee. I like a comic and a coffee.
Mm. I did. So I've occasionally been taking Tuesdays off because I forgot to take all of my personal days for the year until now. So, reading like, not to blow up my own spot, but reading Saga the Swamp Thing this morning over just a cup of coffee and just sitting there and reading it was very nice.
Wow.
It was a good time.
It must be nice being you.
I mean,
taking days off, you know?
Yes, I took the days that I'm allowed at my job and left to the end of the year because I hadn't taken a day off the previous couple of months, Pete. I'm sorry that I can't go away with my teenage girlfriend every other weekend. Jesus Christ.
Teenage? What the fuck kind of shit is that?
Kevin says, which comic book character would you most be able to dress like? Which comic book character would you most be able to dress like on a day-to-day basis? Great question, Kevin.
Great question. Moon Knight. Galactus.
Oh, yeah, he's got that hat.
I have a... I'm always like, which Galactus hat
you
should I wear?
You better fucking apologize right now, because what you said was fucking wrong, man.
I'm sorry. I apologize, Pete. I take it back.
There's no illegal activity happening.
I take it back. You haven't been away every other weekend. It's been less frequently than that. But
I'll tell you what. I don't know. I think it's Alex who's drinking the White Lightning tonight. Because there's a crackling energy.
I'm definitely riding the White Lightning is what's going on right now. I'm getting a little too close to the sun, so to speak.
Oh, my God. Well, I would say...
just
dress like a character is to. Oh shit! Did I freeze?
Yeah, you froze. Froze right in the middle there. Man, I don't know. I feel like you could probably dress like Wolverine, right? And that would be okay. Like not his costume, but leather jacket, no shirt, leather pads.
Yeah, no shirt, cigar,
mm-hmm.
Pants. Yep, pants. Pete, who would you dress like?
I don't know what the fucking question was.
Which comic book character would you be able to dress like on a day-to-day basis?
I don't know. Some nerdy guy who runs a comic book shop, maybe. Foggy Nelson. Yeah, thank you, Nat.
Here's another question from Nat. What are the must-have books for the past year or so that are out in trade now? Things that you would buy for people who like comics but do not keep up? That's a great question, Nat. And I was actually thinking earlier today that we now need to kick off our best of the year stuff pretty soon because we're getting into the last month of the year here. So I'm going to hold off on answering that question, I think, because we haven't really discussed this. Nat says, thank you, Alex, and nothing after that, which is very nice. No problem, Nat. I think maybe we'll put it out to people, same as we did last year. That was a lot of fun, and we got some great suggestions from you guys. We came up with some lists of our own. Maybe beyond doing the best comics of the year, maybe we could do best trades of the year as well, so people can go back and read collections of stuff.
A little holiday shopping list for people trying to get someone in their life into the comic book realm.
What do you think about that, Pete?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of great stuff. It's always hard to recommend things for people because we don't know what they're into. But yeah, there was a ton of great stuff. Like Something is Killing the Children was really great. There's been some really amazing kind of stuff coming out this year. So I'll be excited to talk more about it.
This isn't a trade yet, so I'm definitely avoiding the question. But there's a book by Scotty Young called The Me You Love in the Dark. Mm-hmm. That wraps up tomorrow, and man, I really like that book. And it's a great, like, sort of very spare story for someone that isn't super familiar with comics to really dive into.
Absolutely. But yeah, we'll loop back to that and do some of that stuff because that sounds like fun. And we got one last one. This is again from Pablo here. The hype for No Way Home is nuts. Will you see it or not? Pete, you're going to go see Spider-Man No Way Home.
Yeah, I'll see it eventually. Yeah, sure.
Are you going to go see it in theaters, though?
I mean, that's the plan.
Opening weekend?
Yeah.
I hope so. We'll see if we're all alive.
Oh, yeah, that part of things. What about you, Justin? Yes.
I'm going to go see it in theaters. And I do have a confession. I only very recently watched Far From Home, Spider-Man Far From Home. So who knows where it'll end up. But I have a feeling that the Omicron variant is not going to be as devastating as it seems to be right now, and that it will be pretty feasible to go to the movie theater in a couple weeks.
Yeah, the thing that was holding me up a little bit, also that's my daughter's birthday weekend, so we kind of have to figure out her plans before I start being like, I can't come to your birthday because I'm going to see a new Spider-Man movie. But once we figure that all out, my plan currently is to see it because at this point, I'm triple vaccinated. My wife's going to be triple vaccinated by that point. My kids are now or will be fully vaccinated by that point. So I'm feeling a lot safer about more regularly going to the movie theater, which will be great. Right in time for Spidey to watch one of three possible Spider-Men die. That'll be fun. And folks, that is it for your audience questions. And now we're going to move into our next section, which is trivia. And for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right.
Pete Page.
We give back to the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win 25 free dollars in the form of a gift card to Midtown Comics. And we do have somebody
I'm going to invite him into the stream right now. Right, his name is Joe Benton. He's going
right.
to be doing trivia with us today.
Joe!
Joe was asking a question earlier, so this is a big Joe Benton.
Joe's a full-service audience member. He contributes in
Joe.
Every...
All right!
Hey! Welcome to the show, sir.
Welcome to the show. Thanks so much for doing trivia. I am going to turn you over to the welcoming hands of Pete LePage right now.
All right, great.
The star of trivia.
All right, let's, okay, great. Today's trivia is on topical comic news and a small nod to the legend Art LaFleur, R.I.P. So please listen to all three options before making your selection. Joe, here we go. What is the upcoming graphic novel about desserts called? Is it A, Yummy, B, Here, Eat This, You Could Learn Something, or is it C, Tawanda Underdo? So it's either A if you would like $25, or you could pick B or C.
Tough. I'm going to go with A.
Yeah, that's right. Don't overthink it. Yummy. Nice. Graphic great. Novel about the history of desserts. I can't wait to read it and then eat the whole thing. All right, here we go. Question two. Who is writing a story for their character in the upcoming 100-page anniversary comic, Gotham City Villains? Is it A, Greg Pak, B, Danny DeVito, or is it C, Gene Hackman? So it's either A, don't pick it, or it's B, Danny DeVito.
Oh, God. That you make it so tough, Pete. I'm going to go with B, man.
B, correct. Wow. Very excited.
For those Danny of you just listening, Joe is really going through it, grabbing the sides of his head in a full freakout mode at this moment. So
Pablo points out in the comments, by the way, Gene Hackman, isn't he retired? Not from comic book writing.
That's right. But I'm also very excited that they're going to give Danny DeVito a chance to write the Penguin. That should be crazy. Here we go. Last one. What kid version is coming to murder Earth in Avengers number 50? Is it A, Loki, B, Thanos, or C, John Madden? So it's either A, Loki, or it's B, Thanos.
B, Thanos.
Yeah, Joe Madden. Well done. $25.
Amazing. Congratulations. We're going to get you a $25 gift card to Midtown Comics. Thank you for jumping in.
Thanks, guys. You
have an answer, though, to what the secret movie starring Art LaFleur that Pete was referring to is?
I've got an answer. It's definitely incorrect, but I'll throw one out there. I mean,
sure.
I'm thinking it's something like an Ingmar Bergman film.
Nice flex. Nice flex.
Yeah, way to flex on it. Flex. Yeah, yeah.
No, I have no idea. I have no clue whatsoever.
Well, I'm talking about the 2000 hit The Replacements.
Keanu Reeves, man.
Yeah, come on. An unbelievable rom-com and a sports movie. You got everything
classic.
You want there.
Classic shitty movie.
Yeah.
Don't tell Pete that, but appreciate your time, Joe. And we'll get that gift card to
thank
you.
Thank you, Joe.
Have a great night.
Yeah, well, thanks, guys.
All right.
John Madden
there
was a good clue for that, Pete.
Yeah, that was a very good clue.
I love when
and if you'd like to participate in trivia, I'm going to drop the link in the chats here. It'll also pop up on our Twitter feed at Comic Book Live. But in the meantime, comic books, they're always coming out and always new ones. What are you looking forward to, guys, that's coming out this week? Pete?
Oh, man. Deadly Class number 49 is bananas good. And
so
also, this little book, we don't really talk about every issue that comes out, so I wanted to talk about it. Once in Future, number 22, it's one of the greatest covers you'll ever see. Just really great. So,
And there's a lot of great grandma action inside, right, Pete?
Yeah. Always.
Justin, what about you? What are you looking forward to?
Well, I mentioned it earlier. The Me You Love in the Dark, number 5, the final issue of the series comes out. Really enjoyed that book. But there's a lot of, there's some great DC annuals coming out as well. They have come out.
Of them.
And I want to shout out the Nightwing annual. I feel like Nightwing is just, we're in a renaissance.
We really are.
a Grace-sonnaissance, if I may. And I want you to all to really enjoy it while we can. And let me finally shout out. It's a good time to be Justin. Let me also just shout out Human Target number 2 by Tom King and Greg Smallwood. Whoo, this is a good looking book. Man, great, great issue.
I'll shout out another DC book that's out today, Wonder Woman Historia, the Amazon's number 1 by Kelly Sue DeConnick and Phil Jimenez. They've been working on this for years, I think, at this point, and it's finally coming out. Since it's already out, I think I can say it's stunning, like ludicrously amazing to look at. The art is beyond anything that Phil Jimenez has ever done before, so I'm very excited to chat about it with you guys on the Stack Podcast,
yes,
which rolls out in the Comic Book Club feed and its own dedicated Stack feed every Wednesday at 9 a.m. And folks, that is it for this week's show. We want to thank Mark Waid for coming on. Don't forget to check out Humanoids, The History of Science Fiction. It is a massive volume, but well worth picking up. Next week on the show, we're going to have Chrissy Newton and Marie Nicola from Alt Pop Repeat are going to be here, as well as John Lazar to talk about Odd Yarns. A couple of other things to plug. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast, is rolling out Wednesdays with new episodes about Hawkeye, so check that out. Also, Riverdale After Dark, our Riverdale podcast, now up on Tuesdays, because that's when the show comes out. So check that out. If you want to support the show and all the shows we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. You can subscribe, listen, and follow on iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice. Don't forget to leave us a question or request in the iTunes reviews at Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram, comicbookclublive.com. For this podcast and many more, until next time, good night.
Thanks, everybody.
They sit on graphic couches and they let the secrets leak. And occasionally they let that special guest speak. So grab your